Hey Dale.
I'm Theo, and I'm a alcoholic.
Girls.
Let's see. It's a little different speaking in my home group. A little nervous, but my sobriety date is December 11th, 2021. So I just celebrated 4 years. And last week here, so that was nice. And I do have a sponsor. He's here, and I'm lucky. My sponsor goes to two of the meetings that I go to every week, so I get to see my sponsor twice a week, and that's really a blessing for me because he's helped me a lot. And let's see, I do have a home group. This is my home group. And I'm blessed to have this as a home group, and it's really a great honor to speak here tonight because I needed this. It's been a while since I shared my story, and after the last couple of years, I kind of really needed to recap everything and maybe start fresh here in 2026. It's going to be nice here to get a little cleansing here because every time I share, I feel cleansed after I get done, but that certainly doesn't take away the nervousness at the beginning. But I like to open with I live in a little village called Uno, and Uno got its name, a little history lesson here, because during Prohibition, there were stills in the woods there, and they were making liquor. And everybody says, "Where do you get your liquor from?" I said, "You know where I get my liquor from." So Uno is spelled UNO, so I don't think they went to. Didn't do real good in spelling class back then, but anyway, so let's get started here. I was born in 1985, started beginning, and grew up in a farming family. My dad farmed for a living, my granddad farmed for a living, and I loved it. I loved it. We had everything we needed. Times were tight sometimes, excuse me. And, but we had a good time. I had a great childhood. I think the alcoholism comes from my mother's side because her grandfather was a recovering alcoholic and her father died at age 42 of, alcohol related illnesses. So I never knew him. And, I don't know if it skips a generation or not, but I drew the lucky straw. But growing up, you know, I always felt different. There weren't a lot of ag kids in my where I grew up. And I liked farming. I liked equipment, cows, all that stuff, and just never really fit in. And I was always taller than everybody else, skinnier. And I worked on the farm as much as I could. I didn't do very well in school. Always struggled in school. Always wanted to be outside. And my father had this fella working for him, and I just idolized that man. He could play music. He could weld, operate equipment. And I'd ride up to his house. And I was 12 years old when I drank my first beer. And I still remember what that can looked like, how it tasted. And I specifically remember drinking that beer and wanting another one at 12 years old. But I didn't turn into an alcoholic right then and there. I mean, it was a couple more years before I had another drink probably, but here and there drinking with the guys after work or something. But high school is when it kind of really started to blossom. And, it was, looking back, it was easy to get alcohol. I mean, you knew somebody that was older than you, or parents didn't drink heavily. My dad can't stand the taste of alcohol. He doesn't like it. And so we never really drank together. He'd drink half a beer and dump it out. I was always looking at him dumping it. And he'd say, "Man, what are you doing that for?" But every Friday or Saturday night, we were drinking beer in high school or liquor or whatever we get our hands on. And play football in high school, and that's when I really just kind of blossomed. I wasn't very good in football. I was third string on a second place team, and but man, we partied like we were winning national championship every year, every week, and just fit that. Just, I mean, we were having a good time, and it was a good time. And run-ins with the law were slim. When we were small town, we knew a lot of where to not go, where to, if we did get run-ins, they usually let us go. No real consequences ever. I had a good friend of mine, actually he's my brother-in-law now. He wrecked a pickup going home one night, smacked a tree, and he walked away from it. Just nothing ever really happened. And we just, I don't know. It just didn't seem like it was a problem. And it really didn't become a problem. Didn't know what I wanted to do when I graduated high school. Thought about joining the Marines. Didn't do that. Ended up going to college up in a small school up in Pennsylvania. And joined a fraternity up there, an ag fraternity, which was a great time. Wasn't living at home then, so you could drink like you wanted to. I mean, I can remember going to the beer store up there and just trying to buy beer, and the man sold it to me, so didn't have to worry about getting it. Endless supply. Worked up there, so I had endless money. And it was, so this fraternity I was in, it was a professional fraternity, so you had to have a certain GPA to stay in it. And I'll give them that, probably helped me graduate. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have graduated. I'd have flunked out. But because at a certain GPA, they'd start restricting your drinking.
Oh.
And I didn't want that. So I maintained just enough to sneak by. And but in that college career there, 4 years, I met a beautiful lady there, and we ended up dating, and then ended up getting married after college. She moved down to Virginia. She was from Pennsylvania, and we just, things were good. Things were good. Ended up getting a job on the farm with my father, and working with him every day. And my alcoholism really didn't, I wasn't drinking every day, but I was maybe drinking every other day, every weekend. We were drinking, somebody was somewhere. And I mean, my alcoholism is a, it was a picture perfect of progression. It started out slow and graduated every year, I would say, into something a little more frequently. And let's see, we got married in 2011, and we had our first daughter in 2000. Oh, I should know this off the top of my head, but she's 12, so what's that, 2013. So, and my wife, she at the time, my wife at the time, she drank, but I remember going to her, one of her cousin's weddings, and she got drunk off of wine and puked the whole way home. And it took her 3 days to recover from that. And she just said, "I don't like the way that made me feel. I just don't think I'm gonna drink anymore." And I looked at her, I said, "What is wrong with you?" I mean, so I just said, "Well, I'll drink for the both of us then, And I did. And in my mind, that meant I had a DD everywhere I went, everywhere we went together, which was, I didn't even think to say, I won't drink tonight. So it just, the selflessness of this alcoholic that is one of my biggest character defects, is selflessness, self-centered, all about me. And so in we had a we had our daughter in 13, and then in 13 I also went into business with my father. And one day I was guaranteed a paycheck every month, and the next day I was $1 million in debt, and bought machinery, animals, and started farming for myself. That is when my alcoholism started to change. That's when it became, I needed it to help deal with the stress I was under, and the I was self-medicating with it, and it did a very good job. I'd come home at night half drunk, and I didn't care about nothing. Didn't care about if it rained, didn't care about if it rained too much, didn't care about the bills that needed paid. But I was still a functioning alcoholic at this point. I mean, the bills always got paid. I just didn't worry about them. The farm work always got done. The house, the electric bill was always paid. It numbed a lot of it. And but it still wasn't a problem. I was still showing up for work every day. And let's see, in 15 we had our second daughter, and my alcoholism kept building on that. And 15, and then in 18, 18 we had our third daughter. And so I have three girls, and they are beautiful girls, and I love them to death. And one of the worst things I did with those girls is I'd ride them around when I was drinking. I'd take them places, or I wouldn't go places because I knew there wouldn't be alcohol there. I mean, alcohol was running my life at that point. But that was the great thing about farming was I could go 8 hours without seeing anybody, so I could drink on the job. I was a professional at hiding it and manipulating it, putting it places because I knew I'd be at this farm, at this field. I knew I'd make it there sometime, so I would strategically put alcohol there. I mean, just unbelievable the amount of energy I spent trying to hide it, protect it basically, and so I could function. I mean, I just couldn't. At that point, I don't think I could go a day without drinking. I know I could, I didn't, but nobody ever asked me to stop, so wasn't a problem. I hadn't lost my wife yet, hadn't lost the kids, hadn't lost my job. Everything was cool, and till it wasn't, till it wasn't. And let's see. So one day, so this is a funny story. So right outside of is it's on 231 out here, and I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Somerset store that used to be there. And that's where I'd buy my beer every morning or every evening. I couldn't A case of beer would not make it 2 days. So you had to be strategic. And didn't want to buy it at 8 o'clock in the morning because you look like an alcoholic. So you'd buy it in the evenings, whether you needed it or not, because you didn't want to look like an alcoholic. So the Somerset store, they were building a circle there, and a tractor trailer ran the stop sign and blew through that store and basically exploded it. It's gone. So now I got to start being strategic where I'm buying my alcohol because the closest convenience store in any direction is 10 miles away at this point. Either got to go to Barboursville, Gordonsville, Orange, or Madison because there ain't nothing in between. So, I mean, I can remember taking my kids to preschool at a church and leaving there, going to a gas station and buying beer in the morning. So you had it for the rest of the day because you knew you didn't have enough. And that feeling of not knowing you had enough is just I mean, you all know, it's just indescribable having that feeling. And I was at the store getting beer one morning, and a friend of mine says, "Man, you're awful early to be buying beer, ain't it?" "Yeah, you know, just getting prepared since that store got knocked over." He says, "Man, I've been noticing you've been drinking quite a bit lately." He said, "You know, some people have expressed some concern." I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I probably drink more than should." And, you know, that whole day, I kind of got to thinking about it. Yeah, I don't know. So I said, "Yeah, I think I do got a problem." So I got drunk that night, come home and told my wife, "I think I got a problem with alcohol." You know, don't know what to do about it. And she was so happy I said something because she'd known for years. And, but I didn't do nothing. I just quit drinking. Like, I was drinking 25 to 30 beers a day and just stopped. Lucky I didn't kill myself. But that lasted about 3 days. That was the first time I tried to quit. And that was the last time I tried to quit till this time. Then I had to get really good at hiding it. Really good. And I got really good. Really good. And but I couldn't drink the way I wanted to anymore, so I had to drink extra hard when I could, and that really accelerated it, really turned me into a person I didn't want to be, and just felt horrible. Till one day I said I just couldn't hide it anymore. It was just unhideable. Drinking that much, smelling like that, coming home to a wife and kids, just I don't really remember how it went down. I don't think it was, I don't want to say it was an ultimatum, but it was, she got the courage to bring it up and basically said, "I can't remember the exact words, but you know, you need some help or work on it." And long story short, well, I said, "I'm not going to do it like I did last time because that about killed me. I'm going to wean myself off this time." And I was serious because I knew I had a problem, but I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't have this. I didn't know anybody that was in this. So I would make a rule. I said, "I'm not going to drink till after 12 o'clock." We'd be 11:59, and I'd be count the beer would be cracked, and I would be counting the seconds down to drink it. And I'm only going to drink six today, and I actually weaned myself off of it, but it took me a good while. And that poor woman, she didn't have Al-Anon yet. She had some. How many beers did you drink today? "Oh, I only drank two." Well, that was, you know, I think she knew it was a lie. But she wanted to know. But I did wean myself off, but I couldn't stay stopped. I could make it 3, 4 days, could make it a week. I mean, this woman, she would track my credit cards. If I used it, she would want a receipt to prove. I mean, it was, I turned her into a crazy person. 100% I turned her crazy. And that's one of my biggest regrets too, is turning her into, I mean, if I'd come home, lie about it. It turned me into, I literally turned me, I didn't have to lie before. Nobody asked. I didn't have to steal before because I just did what I wanted. Nobody asked. And it turned me into a person I couldn't stand. And I couldn't stop. I mean, I didn't know I really had a problem that bad till I tried to stop and I couldn't. And it was just uncontrollable. And I was mean. I was hateful. I was irritable. Everything the book says it would turn into. And she said, "That's sitting in the kitchen there. Why can't you just stop?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know." And I think that's when she realized that it was, mean, she needed help to get through this. I needed help to get through this, and I didn't want help. I wanted to do it on my own. I can fix it. I fixed everything else. I mean, that's the nature of my business. You know, something breaks, we fix it. The plants need something, we give it to them. And but I didn't have it for this. I didn't have an answer. She said, "Don't you think you should go to AA?" And I said, "Oh no, I ain't going to that place. That's I ain't one of them people." You know. But and she suggested, "What about this outpatient?" There was an outpatient program at Culpeper. And I agreed to go to it. I think I wanted to just get the heat off and just kind of get things leveled out because it was pretty bad at this point. And so I said, I'll go. So I go to this outpatient and walk in there for the first time. I mean, just nervous as can be. And when they kind of do that, the first meeting there, first kind of analysis of you. This lady, I mean, she was good. She knew what she was doing. And you know, she was asking me how much do you drink and all of this, and what do you want to, you know. I said, I just really would like to get to where I can just drink two or three and enjoy myself. You know, I don't want to be dependent on it. And she says, oh, I think we can help you with that. You're at the right place. And little did I know, she. That was bullshit. But excuse my language. But I thought, man, they're gonna make me drink like a normal person. We'll be all right. So I started attending these things, and you know, my wife told me later, she said, I thought you'd go to one or two of them things and you'd never go back. But I think I wanted to prove it to her that I could get this thing. But I still couldn't stop drinking. I'd make it a week, 2 weeks. I don't think I ever made it a month in that. I couldn't let go. I couldn't let go of control. I thought I could still do it. And but there's a fellow here that took me to my first AA meeting, and because that was part of the requirement to get out of that program was you had to go to an AA meeting. So. Man, I was nervous. I did not want to go here. I don't know why. I guess I thought I was scared I'd see somebody in here that I knew. But hell, everybody knew I was an alcoholic anyway. So what, I don't, I mean, just complete, just scared. And I remember I don't think you had a license at that point. I picked you up and we went to a meeting and you offered to pay me for my gas money. I said, nah, man. I mean, it was something was starting to work. Cause I said, "Nah, I don't want any cash because I'll spend it on beer. Because anytime I got some cash, I would spend it." So something was starting to click, and I go to my first AA meeting, and it was a Saturday morning, no, Sunday morning, in Madison, and I shared there, and a bunch of people come up and introduce themselves. And wanted to help, gave me phone numbers. Well, guess which meeting I didn't go back to? That one. Because you all cared too much. And something else in that outpatient, they would make you do a urine test. And they could test for alcohol in this one. At least that's what she told us. I don't know if that was true or not, but I would Google how long is alcohol staying in your urine, you know. And the lady, we all sat in the same seats every week, and she just went around the circle, so I could just count. I know I'm getting that next week, so I just wouldn't drink that week. But the next, I mean, just crazy, crazy alcoholic. Luckily, I didn't do drugs. I never liked drugs. They're not part of my story because every time I tried it once or twice, and it'd mess up my buzz. I mean, I spent all day to get here. And one tote on this just ruined everything. I'd be in the bushes puking. So I never liked that. I'm a true blue alcoholic. And so I do finally graduate out of that thing, but I'm still holding on to maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a chance. And my wife goes out of town with the kids one weekend, and I go to a Christmas party, and there was alcohol flowing there, but at this point the beast was out of the cage because everybody knew that I was trying to quit drinking, so I'm around the corner of the barn drinking like I'm 16 years old, and I don't remember how much I drank that night, but I didn't get drunk. I couldn't get drunk. The more I drank, so I went home that night, laid in bed, woke up the next morning, and it was like it was a moment of clarity in the room. The sun was shining in the window. It wasn't like a white light, but it seemed brighter than normal. And I said to myself, I just can't do this no more. I can't do it. I can't drink normally. Don't like what I've become as a person. And that was my sobriety date that day. But guess what this alcoholic didn't do? He didn't go to meetings. He said, I graduated. Even my father, he didn't know a thing about AA. And he said, don't you think you need to keep going to meetings? I said, no, man, I'm graduated. I'm just not drinking no more. Well, we all know how that ends. I mean, crazy character defects just exploded. Irritable. I mean, I just somebody look at me wrong, and I'd be mad at him for 4 days. Especially my wife, that poor thing. I don't know why she stayed. I do now. I do know now. I'll get to that later. But just the kids. I mean, that home life was just horrible. It was horrendous. Got to a point where I couldn't stand it anymore. In that same place, in that kitchen where she suggested I go to a meeting, I said, I think I need to go to a meeting. And I come to this meeting right here. And heard my story up here. You all don't know what it's like. You all don't know what I've been through. You all don't know what I'm feeling. But you did once I started listening. And once I recognized that you all were just like me and I was just like you. But I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't join a home group. I just showed up. One meeting a week. Things didn't get any better. I was just struggling. So I decided to go to the day event out there in April. So my sobriety date's December 11th. Here I am, April. So that's a long time to be miserable. And this is a God moment here. This is a pretty good story. Don't know why I drove this pickup. This 1987 pickup out there. My wife baked me some cinnamon rolls to take for dessert. I blow a tire. And I wasn't sure if I was going to go. I thought maybe I'd ride by and see how big a crowd it was, maybe keep going. But God said, no, you're going because I blew a tire. And there is no service up there. I had to walk. It was a quarter mile. Walking down that road and looking at those mountains at what, 8 o'clock in the morning on a spring day. And I walked in there, and the first person I seen was Curtis. And they were dressed up in ties and jackets. I said, man, I'm underdressed. And I said, nah, it's just home group members. I said, but I sat in that thing. I didn't know a soul. Didn't hardly know a soul. And it's so neat to look back and see these God moments. So I had two God moments that day. This guy walked up to me, and I don't know if it was written on my face that I was struggling and that I looked new, because he kind of introduced himself. He said, how long have you been sober? I said, 4 months, barely. So he starts introducing me to some people, and then he ate lunch with me. kind of took me under his wing that day, and he introduced me to that old guy Speedy, and said, "This fella here's got 4 months of sobriety. You got any wisdom for him?" And he kind of like didn't give me the time of day, but he said, "Well, do you have a home group?" And I said, "Nah." He said, "Do you have a sponsor?" I said, "Nah." He said, "Well, dumbass, get you a home group and a sponsor. That'll help you out a lot." And turned around and kept talking to somebody else. And but that's what I needed. I needed somebody to smack me in the head with a two before. And you know, I cannot remember that fella's name that introduced me to him, but I haven't seen him since. And I don't know. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Blew that tire on that pickup and brought a man in my life for 4 hours that I needed. So I come in that Sunday. That was Saturday. I come in the Sunday and joined the home group. And I don't know if I really joined it or not because I don't think I was on the group thread for about 2 months. I said, "Man, how do y'all get all these jobs around here that you're supposed to be doing?" Sam had me then. Typical me, you know, I want to be the center of attention, right? So I said, "Man, I'd really would like to be up at that microphone." Well, Sam puts me on group thread, and that's the first thing I got to do is open. Well, I'm nervous as can be up here, just stumbling over myself. But it wasn't so cool when you actually had to do it. But join this home group, and really started listening, but I didn't get a sponsor don't know why. I don't know if I was like I was looking for a mate, you know. I wanted a perfect one, but I needed didn't know at the time, but I needed one. But nobody really told me to get one. I thought y'all were just talking about it, you know. I didn't think you actually had one, you know. I thought y'all were just suggesting it, maybe. But things were turning around a little bit, but I was lonely. I didn't have friends. All my friends left. They disappeared. And Matt Corbin, he said, "Man, how you doing?" I said, "Man, I'm lonely. I ain't got no friends anymore." He said, "Don't worry about it. We'll get you some new friends." And he was 100% right. You know, but he called me one day, one Wednesday. My wife and kids went to Bible study Wednesday night. So I was at home by myself Wednesday nights. And that was not good for me. And he called me one night and said, "Man, come on over to the New Stables group over on Wednesday nights." I said, "Yeah, man, my wife, kids ain't home. I ain't got nothing going on. That'd be good." So I went to that meeting that night. And till recently, he never went back. And I stayed. So, and that's kind of like my second home group. I mean, it's not official, but I don't miss that one. It's a you know, a topic meeting, and I love that meeting. There's a lot of old sobriety in that meeting, and it's been good. But that's where I met my sponsor. Got talking to this guy, and he said, "Man, you farm? Where do you farm at?" And I was telling him down there along the river, Rapidan, and he said, "You got any metal detecting spots down there?" And I said, "Yeah, come on down." So he came down and I showed him around a little bit, and we ended up talking more about alcoholism than metal detecting. And you know, you hear people share up here, you know, I have a sponsor and they know they're my sponsor. I don't think Wayne knew he was my sponsor for a couple of weeks till finally I was using him like a sponsor, but I didn't have the courage to ask him. I don't know why. I mean, just scared to death, I guess. Fear is a big problem with me. And I finally asked him, and we finally started going through the steps. And I think I was almost in September. So this is not a playbook of how to get sober. Do not follow this one. But it worked. It worked. So we start going through the steps. And you know, I did not have a higher power. I did not have a relationship with a higher power. My wife did. My kids did. My kids knew more about God than I did. I like to quote this, like Forrest Gump, have you found Jesus yet, God? Or Gump? No, I didn't know I was supposed to be looking for him, And I didn't really find that till the seventh step, that there was something there. And it was reflecting back on these God moments. And he was there the whole time. My whole life he's been there. I never had a DUI. I never beat my kids, thank God. Never beat my wife, thank God. But I was a miserable, you know what, to be around. And I put alcohol first for them every time. And we get through the steps and kind of coasted. I thought this was, you could graduate from these things. I didn't know you had to continue to do it. I'm not a good listener. Don't pay attention well. I don't follow directions well. I like to do my own thing. I'm coasting. And I'm coasting. Still talking to my sponsor, but I'm not doing any work. Still coming to my home group. Still doing service. Then they decided to elect me to be GSR, this group. Go to the conference, do that. Just overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. I'm not doing well. AA is becoming inconvenient. I heard a lady speak at that day event that said, if you're not being inconvenienced by AA, you're not doing enough. And I'm saying, man, I'm pretty inconvenienced right now. And fast forward to, well, I guess it'd be the spring of 24. We start having, so my life, my livelihood depends on Mother Nature, rain for growing crops. We had the worst drought we've ever had in 30 years. And I'm at the worst spot I've been at in 3 years of sobriety. I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know what to do. I'm probably closer to a drink than I've ever been in 3 years. My wife is coming to meetings with me, but I'm not listening anymore. I'm really struggling. And I'm not telling anybody about it. I'm not telling my sponsor, not telling my home group members. Then all of a sudden, a friend of mine calls me. Hey, man, I got a problem. Can I talk to you? I said, yeah, I knew exactly what it was. And because he drank like I did, we drank together like that. And he shows up at my shop and he's drunk. And my wife's going to leave me, and I got a problem with alcohol. I said, well, I know a place we can go. So I bring him up here to the meeting Sunday night. And we jump on him. He wants me to be a sponsor. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's exactly what I need right now. I'm inconvenienced. Well, little did I know it was exactly what I needed. And I didn't feel comfortable taking that man through the steps by myself. So Sam offered to take us through it together. That changed my life that day, that couple weeks, because I redid the steps and was helping teaching somebody else to go through the steps. And it saved me. It truly did. But the problem with it was it did not save my marriage. Through all that, I got distant. It was a bad time. And by the time I figured out it was a problem, it was too late. And I don't know at what point it went bad. But it did. And I'd come home at night and be so stressed out. And so just tired of fighting it in my brain. I knew if I drank, it would screw up everything. So I focused on trying not to drink. And by yourself, that's tough to do. But when you get help, it's easy. And so I got that part conquered, but it just the marriage fell apart. And when she said she wasn't happy, and what does this alcoholic do? Try to fix it and push harder to fix it, harder and harder. And all I did was push her further and further and further away. And life got pretty bad for me. I didn't even think about how bad it was for how my feelings are hurt, how my life is going to change. Got pretty suicidal at that point. Went to the doctor. They prescribed some antidepressants. Took them. Didn't help. They made it worse. Made it worse. It was so bad. I took those pills for 4 days, I think. And I said, man, it's going to get better. It's going to. And here in my head, I'm thinking, I'm taking these, it's supposed to make me better, and it's making it worse. And I'm going to a therapist at this point, trying just anything. And Called the doctor. I said, Doc, I'm going to kill myself if I keep taking these things. I know I feel terrible. I'm having panic attacks. I can't get my feet underneath me. He said, well, stop taking them, but you need to come in and see me. So I quit taking them, and I could feel to the hour myself getting better. And I don't know if that was God taking me down a deep hole to get me out, but Billy explained it best when I told him about it. He said, you don't have a medical condition, you got a spiritual condition that requires a spiritual solution. So I don't know if he took me to the edge to bring me back to see how bad it was. I don't know. I'm glad it didn't get, but the doctor wanted to prescribe me some other ones. I said, no, Doc, I ain't messing with them. That was hell. That was as close to hell as I got. Even when I was drinking, laying in a ditch somewhere, puking, that wasn't as bad as this hell. And start talking to my sponsor every day. He's calling, checking up on me. I admitted I had problems. And home group members are calling, checking on me. I move out from my house, move in with my parents. And that was tough. That was tough. I love my parents to death, but there's a reason I moved out. Of my parents' house 25 years ago. But I'm muddling through this thing. I still think we can fix this thing. I still, and my wife, I think she knew it was over. She just couldn't admit it. And I'm still pushing. I'm still trying. I'm still doing all the wrong things and making it worse. Just completely screwing everything up. Selfish, self-centered, thinking about myself. Finally, she says she wants a divorce. And I immediately called Dale. And he said, when. I mean, there's nothing I can do now. I mean, I got to follow through with this, and because you can't. It was like pushing a rope. You just can't. And Dale said, the only way you're gonna get through it is to be kind, be nice, and ask if there's anything you can do. And that's what I did. And that was probably the best advice I've ever had. Now, I didn't do that all the time, but I tried to practice that. And it was like a weight was lifted off my shoulder. I didn't know it was going to get a whole lot harder, but at that moment it was like a moment of clarity again. And said something to Dale about, being, if it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't have gotten sober. She was the one that suggested it. And he said, does she know that? And I said, no. He said, you probably should go home and tell her that. Well, home wasn't home, man. But I went down there that night, say goodnight to my kids, and I told her, I said, I want to thank you so much for helping me get sober. She doesn't take credit for it. She says, God, it's more, she's got a pretty good spiritual program. And I said, no, it's, I think God works through people, and you recognized it and you saw it and you helped. Was it always the right way? Probably not. But if she'd have left me 3 years before that, I'd have died drunk. I would have no reason to get sober. Not a stitch. So I'm grateful for her for that. And I will always be grateful for her for that and sticking with me. This wasn't my plan. It was not going, this is not how sobriety is supposed to look in my eyes. But it was enough. It got me sober. And the fact that I stayed sober during all that is a miracle. Flat miracle. It shows that AA works. And I thought life was over, done. I'm going to die alone. This is going to be miserable. I'm going to lose everything. But we sat down together, me and her, and we hashed everything out. Split everything 50-50. Split the kids 50-50. Did it like a sober person. Was it perfect? No. Was it the best case scenario for a worst case situation? Absolutely. I couldn't imagine trying to do that drunk. I couldn't imagine. It'd be hell. It would have all just exploded in my face. I got to keep the house. Paid her equity out of that house. I got the kids 50% of the time. I don't have to pay any child support. I don't have to pay any alimony. She didn't take any of my farm. The farm's worth a lot of money. She left it alone. She said, I know if I take that, it'll ruin it. And I don't want to do that. So I'm grateful for her. I'm grateful for God for guiding us that we could work together. And it is crazy. Co-parenting with somebody that you're not together with is just, it's an unbelievable, it's hard to explain. We communicate more now than we did when we were married. And that is, that messes with your brain. Why are we divorced if we're working so good together? But it's just not meant to be. It just didn't work out. But it's working out now. And I can remember, the only one that's going to win in this is the lawyers. And I mean, I spent $1,500 on a lawyer. That's all it cost me. And doing it this way has been, sometimes I wish it was a straight B sometimes, because I think it would, I don't think it would be easier, but in my head, it would make me easier to move on, But we still communicate. I still do things for her when I can. And there's something else out there. I mean, I don't know when, I don't know who or but I was Wednesday night. It was actually about relationships. The topic was last Wednesday night. And I was, there was 15 people in that meeting, and 13 had been divorced. And one hadn't been married. And Wayne was the only one in there that hadn't been divorced. And I know I'm going to make it through because there's proof. There's 13 other people in that room that made it through and have pretty good lives. And it's a good feeling to be sober and to be functional. And to make it through, I don't want to drink anymore. The obsession has left. I can still remember the where I was, what I was doing the first day I didn't think about alcohol. And images like that are burned in my mind. But I kind of skipped over a little bit there when I was on those antidepressants. This is another God moment that I love. I love recognizing these things and I love talking about them. I couldn't stop crying. My life is over. Just could not get myself together. And was actually Googling one of those suicide hotlines to talk to. Why didn't I just call my sponsor? Because this alcoholic don't think that way, And I was uncontrollably crying and standing right there by the wood stove. It was cold. And I'm standing over the wood stove just crying, and my phone rings, and it's my sponsor. And I answer because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen. And it was like when I answered that call, quit crying. I had a sense of ease about me. Something was lifted when I answered that call. And there was another time I left. I was still trying to fix it, right? I'd go down there and just, we're going to fix this right now. We're going to fix it. It ended up in a full-blown knockdown, drag-out fight, argument. I pulled out of that driveway and I put my foot to the floor of that pickup, and I wasn't going to pick it up till I went straight to a curb. And Billy Hill called me. I looked down at the phone and I said, damn. So I answered it, but it kept me from going through that curve. And that divorce taught me how to pray every night. I wasn't praying every night. I wasn't praying every day. Prayed when I wanted something. Still, 3 years sober, 3.5 years sober, still wasn't praying every day. I'd forget, or things were good. I didn't need to pray. So that divorce taught me how to pray. God, take this pain, take these thoughts, take these feelings, and do with me as you please. Allow me to do your will today, God. Thy will, not mine, be done. Pray and thank you for keeping me sober today. Thank you for keeping everyone safe today. I didn't have that. And I still have to pray at night for God to help me remind me to pray in the morning. Because I get busy, I wake up, I'm late, and I forget to pray in the morning. And I'll go halfway through the day. Damn, I did not pray this morning. So I'll stop what I'm doing and pray right then. So I'm still a work in progress. I'm still not perfect. I know we won't ever be perfect, but we sure as hell can strive to be perfect. And, that divorce made me a better father, made me be present for those kids, made me do things I didn't want to do. It made me a better son. I've talked to my parents. When I lived with them, I didn't have a choice. I had to talk to them. I didn't want to share my sobriety with them. But they wanted to be part of it, and I didn't want them to be part of I shared stuff with them. They were just, I'm not ready for them to sit here and hear my story yet. I'm not ready for that yet. One day, I hope that I can share it with them. Listen, my kids the same way. They wanted to come tonight, and I said, it's 12, 10, and 7. I don't know if I'm ready for that yet either. And they don't need that yet. They don't need that weight yet. But I do know life's going to be okay. Life's going to come. It's completely out of my control. It is not my plan. As much as I want it to be my plan, as much as I will fight to try to make it my plan, it's not. And to let go of control and recognize that there's somebody there, and to recognize that there is help And you need to take advantage of that help, and you need to ask for help, whether it's with God, whether it's with another alcoholic. There's no better feeling than having another alcoholic calling you, asking you for advice. That's a good feeling. And advice is free; you get what you pay for. But you got to be careful. But it is a good feeling when another alcoholic calls you and to be of service. I did have to give up that GSR position because it just didn't work out with my schedule. It might work out now, but tell you what, you learn a lot going down there. It ain't no downtown, you know, when you go to Norfolk, but there's some different ducks out there. But I did learn a lot about how AA works. Glad to be here tonight. I think I'm about spent. It's an honor. It's a privilege. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Appreciate it.